Welcome back to the Out of the Woods, your go-to podcast for threat hunting insights. I'm your host, Scott Poley.
Agging along as always, I'm Tom Costura.
In this weekly segment, the Testimonial from the Trenches, we sit down with the people on the front lines of cybersecurity, threat hunters, analysts, defenders, really to hear their real-world experience and lessons learned, and the stories you might find not in other headlines that we typically talk about. So let's jump into this week's testimonials. We're joined by Ben McGavin and Justin Dogos, if I'm saying that correctly, from RSM. Ben and Justin, if you don't mind introducing yourselves.
I'm Ben McGavin. I've been in a SOC role for the last 6 years now. It's already been 6 years. Time flies when you're working on alerts. At RSM Defense, currently I am the threat hunting team lead. So I am currently building out a threat hunting program. The last year and a half now, I've been building out a threat hunting program here at RSM Defense. And making steady progress day by day. Something I did back in April was bring Justin on the team here. And he is my full-time hunter here. I'll let him introduce himself.
Yeah, I'm Justin Dolgus. I am the senior threat hunter at RSM Defense. With Ben, I've been in a SOC environment for about 6 years or so, triaging alerts and handling escalations. I started off as a SOC analyst, but I noticed that Ben was building something pretty substantial over here at RSM Defense, and I started to want to go past just the alerts and see what else we could possibly be missing and get into threat hunting and custom detection engineering.
Very cool. So it sounds like both of you guys have that SOC background. Did you guys do anything prior to SOC that was security oriented, or was it more just kind of like IT or technology based stuff?
Yeah, my path was IT, generalized IT, worked my way up through that, and then said, hey, I like security, got Security Plus, and then kind of went down the SOC path there.
Yeah, that's about the same with me, too. I had a system admin job beforehand and got some certifications and joined the SOC side.
So I'm always curious, like, because, we talk to a lot of organizations as customers or people we interact with in general, and that like transition for what like open people up to threat hunting, because it seems like threat hunting has a different meaning to different people sometimes, or different organizations. I'm kind of curious, like, how were you guys introduced to it, and what made it important enough for you guys to even pursue?
As with anything in the cybersecurity world, our bosses wanted it. That was the biggest thing here at RSM Defense. The last SOC I worked for, it was something I wanted to get into, but they said we want experience. So, unfortunately, the path wasn't open there for me to join that threat hunting team, but, I kind of got the last laugh in building out the program here. So, they wanted, threat hunting because we're trying to get the SOC really to a good mature state here at RSM Defense. And, what better way to do that than have a threat hunting program, right? Because once we're done figuring out how we're going to respond to alerts, then we can start branching out and looking more proactively, right? Once you get those processes straight, well, it's like, well, what are we not seeing with our tools? So that was the next logical step. They had farmed threat hunting tasks to various SOC analysts throughout the last couple of years before the program was started out. It worked, but they also have alerts to work. So actually dedicating resources to it was the next step. And that's kind of where we're at now.
Yeah, I would say, like, Tom, that was kind of how we got introduced, right? We were trying to do threat hunting alongside SOC work. And that was kind of a challenging task just based on the resource strain alone. So,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to blend those two sometimes. But at the same time, I think a lot of it blended naturally. We didn't even realize we were hunting for quite some time, and we were, right? And we were diving in, digging in, trying to go at things in a different way, kind of that unstructured process. And we didn't even know we were hunting at the time, I think.
So, Justin, did you join on because Ben was starting up that team, or were you already kind of eyeballing threat hunting or the concept of threat hunting beforehand?
I was kind of already eyeballing it. I was building dashboards and using different tools in our environment to really highlight what we might be missing. And
okay,
like Tom was saying, I didn't realize I was threat hunting at the time. But
yeah. So as far as like your guys' approach and your definition of threat hunting, how would you guys define it? Like as far as what does that look like from like a workflow perspective, or how do you prioritize things, or how do you go about building things? Because everyone kind of has like a unique process that kind of circles the kind of the same criteria. So I'm just kind of curious if there's any nuances in what you guys actually do.
Right. Yeah. We have three main avenues to have threat hunts. One is intel based. So no matter what the intel source is, whether it be our internal intel resources, we have an intel team here at RSM Defense. So we work with them. Whether it be our boss saw something and said, you need to go hunt this, or I saw something, or Justin, I know Justin's always looking at his different resources. There are many different ways intel can get into our pipeline. And then it's just a matter of go through hunting process, looking for those IOCs. And usually it ends with us building a custom detection. If it's something that is worthy of a custom detection, something that's not like caches or IPs, and also something that's not going to create 1,000 alerts to really finish the burnout in the socket. So that is the, that's intel. So we also have behavior driven. So we have the SOC working alerts at all time, of course. And anytime they say, hey, this isn't something I'm going to escalate necessarily, but I don't know what's going on here. They'll hit a button in our automation platform, gets over to us, and then we'll take a look, a deeper dive into the IOCs they might have, or the weird stuff they're seeing that they can't put their finger on. You know, we're a more experienced team here that will deep dive into that. And then the last main avenue is hypothesis hunting that we do. We have hypothesis hunts that recur once every 2 weeks that we're hunting at all times. We have at least one a day that we're doing. And those are just based on your average hypotheses, things like PowerShell related stuff, scheduled task related stuff, RDP related stuff. So we're looking at that kind of stuff too regularly. We have queries that I would say we write, but it's mainly Justin because he's kind of a wizard with writing queries. So I let him do it, let him play to his strengths.
So do you guys have like in the SOC itself, like your tier two or tier three type analyst structure, or you guys kind of fill that top tier as threat hunters?
Yeah. So we're currently doing a big push to upskill our analyst team. Okay. They want our average analyst to be more of a level two, level three. And then we're still on top of that, right? That as an escalation point. Like I said, with the behavior stuff, anything that's weird or they can't put their finger on or they're struggling to query for, they send to us because, Justin's so good at querying that I just let him tackle those.
Do you guys engage? So you kind of said that, it's mostly you two kind of leading that hunt. Do you engage, or do you foresee engaging any of your analysts to kind of bring into the fold as far as helping with your hunt process or actually executing some of the hunts?
Oh yeah, no, that's part of the upskilling from our perspective, right? So there are other teams that are some defense that are upskilling in other ways, but we're either willingly or grabbing, kicking, and screaming analysts to help us out. Typically, they're the curious analysts that have questions they want to answer that we bring into the fold gear. Absolutely, we're actually later today. I have 2 1-hour sessions with different analysts to train them on the hypothesis hunting. So yeah, absolutely, we're working with the SOC analysts here. That's part of the goal, to get them to a point where our leadership sees them in the future assisting hunting in a way where they can knock out kind of 50 to 75% of that stuff that we don't want to see every time. And then they can hand us the more interesting stuff that needs a deeper dive.
Yeah, I always wish, like looking back retrospectively, that I started with threat hunting and then went the analyst route, because I felt like it would make me such a better analyst if I had to do that, that direction. But you guys service multiple environments, right? Like you kind of have like the MSSP model, is that correct? So you kind of have multiple clients and you have multiple environments. How is that? Because like when we build hunts and, a lab and stuff, we try to emulate and stuff we hypothesize on, use threat hit intel. We don't have that benefit to say, well, what would this look like? This hypothesis that we were searching for, this type of activity, as far as false positive natures, things we might traditionally see. Does that make it harder for you guys? Does that make it, you know, is that a huge benefit? Is it easier to mature things? Like, tell me some about that, because I've always wanted to kind of be in an environment to be able to do that. So curious.
We have a few clients that break from the norm, but almost all of our clients have the same tools, the tools that we provide.
Okay.
So that helps kind of keep it ruley. We're stepping into some ventures that might change that. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see how many more gray hairs I get. But as far as working through that, Justin, I'll let you talk about that. That's something that you deal with on a regular basis.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you bring that up, because that was one of the biggest hurdles getting into threat hunting, was the multiple different environments brought about some signal overload for sure. Running certain queries, normal looks different across different tenants. So building out different hunts and also building out the custom detections that come after those hunts, when we either find something or realize that our hunt was so high fidelity that it could make for a good custom detection.
All right.
Building that out when there's so many different environments is kind of tough. And we want the SOC not to have, alert fatigue too. But yeah, it actually is a benefit in my opinion, because seeing these different environments, I'm able to better, hone in on these threats from different perspectives, because the telemetry is so different across these different tenants. I feel like we're building stronger detections and stronger hunts because of that.
Yeah, I would imagine, like, especially trying to like figure out how to tune something or dial something in. If you're able to see that same behavior across multiple environments that are like completely unrelated, and understand that that's more normal, it makes it so much easier. Because sometimes we'll see things and be like, I mean, I remember looking back as an analyst, like just trying to work detections, and you're like, is this good? Is this not good? Like, I don't know what this means. There's a lot of this. It could be bad, So like trying to answer those questions, I feel like that would accelerate that for sure. So that'd be really cool.
When you guys are handling these different tenants, and you kind of mentioned it already, both of you, you have those kind of variables based on the tenant. So it's not normal across the board always. Do you have some kind of a beat on how often that's the case? Because I tend to be a honk on here because of my experience, but it's absolutely not the absolute, right? And no one of us have an experience that just filters across the board. But I always think that those environment variables tend to really play hard into getting really deep into that hunting process. So everybody's environment has these little tweaks and turns that just make a hunt blow up or not effective or anything in between. But I'm curious, from your guys' experience, how often did you see that you need to tune against those versus not? And do you think those environment variables really do play into the thought process of how you engage your hunts?
Sometimes when we see these anomalies outside of the norm, for instance, if we're hunting for a single character executable, I've seen that in environments where unfortunately that is the norm, and engineers have created a certain bat file that runs every day. With things like that, we can't really tune that out, because if an attacker could use the same exact technique. So we can't really tune that out. But with that, we do have, like our own notes section. We have a channel where we share, anomalies that we necessarily can't tune out, but we're going to have to disregard as a false positive for this certain reason. And we just make sure that we share that out with analysts when detections come up, or if we're introducing them to a hunt.
Yeah, I do find it interesting. It's just, we get, we manage like the feedback channel. So when we publish things and people want to give feedback on specific hunts, sometimes we'll have the few, we can call them customers or tenants, but they'll say, hey, we noticed that there's a lot of this. You guys should probably consider excluding this. And we're like, I see, you're absolutely right. It looks like something you should exclude. And if we don't see it in our environment, we don't want to include it, because we don't want someone else to go blind somewhere they don't want to go blind at, So that's always been kind of a challenge, juggling some of those decisions from our front. So we usually are a little more conservative as far as what we exclude. We just enable people or give people ideas for how to identify what to exclude. So, yeah. So from a lessons learned, just starting out the hunt program, what was the hardest thing to really get off the ground with? Was it, I'm assuming it wasn't tooling because it sounds like you guys use a lot of the same tools amongst a lot of the clients, but were there maybe some challenges in some tools you guys use, or was it just building a program or processes?
It was trying to build the program while also having everyone in RSM Defense throw me hunts that they wanted me to do. And I was one person then. Yeah. So I was expected to cover all of the hunting and then also build the processes. And I also had another role I was responsible for. So it was because when you're not dedicated, whenever you don't have a program up and running, you know, you're expected to help with a lot of things. So it was my personal time. But once I got some of the processes on paper that helped me not only do them, they were just having them defined, but also if I needed to hand it off to somebody, like Justin helped me out back then when he was a shift lead in the SOC. He helped me a lot back then and I could hand him stuff. And then as time has gone on, I've been able to define more processes and be able to hand more stuff off to those SOC trainees that we talked about earlier. So that was really big. And also, you know, I had to learn query languages. I was not, I didn't have a ton of exposure before that. So learning the query languages to actually get good queries for hunting was a big part of that. So it was kind of dropped on me and I had to take it run. And that was, you know, just sink or swim, learn the query languages, build processes, and also, you know, complete all the hunts that we need. So, and I think the other part of it, was learning what valuable intel was and what it wasn't. Yeah. Cause back then, hashes and IPs were great to me because I could query them easily. But then it was like, okay, well, you know, getting false positives because those IPs are used for other things, or, you know, no hits on the hashes. And also those are on in the block list and the EDR, right? So it's like, okay, what am I really hunting for? So actually learning what's valuable was huge for the program as well. And now anymore, I think Justin and I roll our eyes more if we see hashes and IPs rather than actually look for them. Yeah, it's like, are they on the list? Okay, cool. Did we tell so-and-so to block them? Sure. All right, we're done with it.
I want to say, like, Tom and I have had the conversation before where now when we look at threat reports, we pay attention to completely different things in a report than what we used to when we were kind of coming up in security. Like, just different things stand out and things we care, we don't care about.
And not that it's a total ignore, just like you said, Ben, but when I look at a report and I see that big, bold IOC list, I'm like, I'm going there last, honestly. Like, I'm looking for all the behavioral stuff now, like not checking out those IOCs at all until I need to.
Yeah. Those are usually the just the cherry on top of the whole threat hunt report that we do.
Yeah.
This is something. So when we search for those, that's something we can add to the report that is easily detectable by the customer when we send it over. They can search for those as well. Or as the tactics, techniques, and procedures, not so much.
Now, do you guys, so if you're doing a threat hunt and you find something for a customer, do you guys try to curate like IOCs around the stuff you think you found? So they kind of have like the custom built IOCs from your hunts to hand off to them in case they, you know, look into it, need to look at, you know, into it further in some way?
It depends on the customer. So we have customers that are, you know, 50 endpoints and a server or two. And then we have customers that have 40,000 endpoints. It's a broad scale and those customers care about different things. Customer that has 50 endpoints is much more concerned. Are we secure? Cool. Let's move on. And whereas, you know, the bigger, more sophisticated clients we have are might take those and look for them themselves. So it's just a matter of, you know, outfitting the solution to the customer, right? So we're not going to bog them down if they don't care. We're just going to make sure they're secure and move on. But if a customer is concerned and they want to look further, we'll absolutely tailor a report to what they're curious about and let them look for it themselves with their teams.
Do you guys, if you're working with a sizable company that's got resources and stuff, do they have threat hunters internally as well that you guys work with or communicate with in some regard? Or do you guys try to take most of that responsibility on yourself?
I don't think we've ran into teams with threat hunters. Usually whenever a company is paying for an MSSP, it's usually the SOC work is handled by them, and threat hunting is typically seen as SOC work. So typically they're expecting us to do that kind of work. Internal security teams are going to be more like information security analyst type roles. People are responsible for the, actually securing the infrastructure as opposed to monitoring alerts and that stuff. So they'll care about the bigger picture stuff so they can look at it on their side, since they know they're always going to know their environment better than we will. We can pick out what we think is bad, but sometimes they're like, that's perfectly fine because X, Y, or Z, right? So that's always fun.
If you were to rebuild your program today, what are some things that you probably would do slightly differently to get off the ground faster or try to incorporate sooner?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that one. Or do something different. I think that I would have gone into the hypothesis stuff a little bit sooner. I was more worried about just building out anything I could, and I didn't know what was important, right? But the hypothesis stuff has turned into recurring hunts that we do that we can really both make our clients a lot more. It's kind of like a warm, fuzzy blanket. I like to at least think of it as a warm, fuzzy blanket that we're always looking, right? Even when we send stuff up and they're like, oh, no, that's fine. You know, customers can see that we're actually looking for them, right? We're not just sitting here waiting for alerts. I think getting on the hypothesis stuff, it took me a while to get on that and really understand what hypothesis hunting looks like. And I think the biggest, most daunting part of it was actually learning the query language well enough to be able to write queries that return results that are actually useful. So getting on the query language sooner and worrying less about the processes probably would have been best for me. Just personally, just because of where I was coming from and my experience level. But yeah, I think getting to the hypothesis stuff sooner would have been best.
Yeah, I would say that the one thing, like the tool thing, I totally get, because Tom and I are both thrown into where we are now, where we like have our hands on a ton of different tools, and luckily we have a wizard on our team that anything we don't understand, he like knows it all. So we can just be like, hey, this is what I'm trying to do, this is what's not working. He can be like, oh, you just need to do it like this, like perfect, because there's nothing worse than that one small thing that holds you up forever trying to figure out how to make it work. Like, that's always a small thing, it's never a big thing,
right? Yeah, Justin's my guy for that, and I'll add the caveat that he doesn't necessarily know everything, but he'll figure it out. I know if I have his boom and neither of us know, he'll figure it out, and I don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's the fun. That's the fun of the job, is the challenges that come with it, you know, like once you, the trial and error of it all.
Yeah. It's like, some of the hypotheses I come up with first, I think I can back it with Intel, and I'm like, okay, this seems like a good idea. And then I'm like, well, now does the tool even support it? And sometimes you got to get really creative to make it work that way, right? And you're just like, oh, okay, finally I figured it out. Or no, this isn't going to work in this tool set, right? So, yeah.
Or you learn that one little caveat about a tool that it just won't see this one little thing for X reason. It's just not built to see this one thing that you really need for your hypothesis, but it just doesn't look at it. So you're blind. But it's definitely, your tool just won't support it.
Yeah, I've rabbit holed though, where I've had like a hypothesis, learn something new about a tool, and I have to abandon my previous hypothesis, but I get all these new ideas now that I learned something new that I could be doing, right? And that also happens, and that's, you know, adds to the creative function of that. So
it's tough with in the MSSP setting too, because we do have some clients that are specifically all in the SIEM environment, and then some that are specifically all in the EDR environment. So when we're, you know, when we're hunting for threats and putting in those custom detections, we're going to have to tailor those to what the tool actually sees and make sure the customer's happy that way.
Yeah.
Do you find hurdles with the folks that tend to fall into that SIEM environment with custom type logs? Do you end up running into any roadblocks with that, where they have certain logs that come in that aren't standard formatted, and you kind of have to help wheel around that for your hunts at all?
Yes. A good example of that would be the SharePoint exploit that just came out recently. With that, all the logs that we were able to detect on was from syslog. And the syslog environment, the syslog logs were coming in as, like, you know, Oracle and regular HTML. So the enrichment there through like an alert isn't, you know, we're getting the raw logs. So formatting that custom detection to where I'm looking for that post request and the refer being sign out, you know, I'm having to use all these different fields in order to build that out. So yeah, it is a hurdle for sure to tailor it to different environments. But it's nice to see that it's actually working, especially with something like that, because as you probably know, there's a whole bunch of external probing and scanning going on for that. And we're picking that up as it comes through. So it's nice to see that, you know, the detections are high fidelity and we're looking and we're catching what we're trying to find.
Do you guys get to suggest or control in some way the types of logs that they are getting collected? How much like control do you have on that? Because I know like one of the things of threat hunting that I find is I do identify visibility gaps, and it's usually like a logging tweak or config tweak or something like that potentially. And that to me is a big win, but I don't know if you guys get too much say in that from where you sit.
Yeah, we kind of just get what we get. That's yeah, whatever they can pull through during onboarding is what we get, right? So
okay.
I'm sure if we get to a point in the future where we find we really need something, then we could maybe make a suggestion. But in the end, we kind of just have to play with the tools we're given, you know?
Yeah.
Where we get the most say is with the tools. For instance, earlier this year, I ran an exploit specifically with a registry key to give permissions as administrator through a regular account. And I ran that in a sandbox with our EDR and noticed that our EDR didn't have the visibility into that. So I was able to then go to the tool and say, hey, we need to see this. This is a big gap in visibility. You know, that's like the only say that we really have. It really all depends on the customer otherwise.
Yeah.
And I'll say I watched Justin do that twice for two different groups, and I still don't know how he did it. So the fact that he was able to do that and, you know, help improve our tools is a really good testament to his ability as a hunter for sure.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite things, kind of sitting in the seat of a threat hunter, is I feel like I get to kind of play with more and explore more than because as an analyst, at least when I was an analyst, I was kind of like tied to, we only allowed to do so many things. So it wasn't really so much that I had the time or capability. It was just the restrictions based on access and other things as well. So that's where our hands are usually tied.
That, and there are always more alerts to work. So,
but yeah, so we
don't have any more, there are more. So
never a shortage of both.
Yeah.
So after you kind of have baked in kind of like your threat hunting process and you guys have kind of been routinely doing it across different environments, what were some of the value you either saw that you either expected to see, so you knew like you're kind of confirming, you know, your program and how you built it, and what were some of the unexpected values too that you kind of saw that came to light as you're going through this process and kind of maturing the stuff out?
You mean value to arson defense or
however you want to define value there, like, you know, it's from you guys as professionals, from RSM's perspective, from your customer's perspective, like just how does that, because I feel like the conversation of value for a lot of people is people will talk to like what they think value is and they don't think about the other forms of value. So I don't like to define it for people because you might highlight something that we're not even thinking about. So it's kind of why I leave it open.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the biggest thing I think that was unexpected is, as I've worked in security now for over half a decade, I've always felt like there was always more that we weren't seeing. Mm-hmm. There's always, it always feels, especially as an MSSP, I worked in a SOC in the MSSP environment for that whole time. I've never worked in an internal SOC. So it always feels like there's something you're not seeing, whether it be endpoints that weren't onboarded at the start, whenever we brought a client on, or just it really felt like it was in a big open environment where, you know, it was dark to us and we kind of only got the light that came in via alerts. And I think threat hunting, building it out, has really, it's made it feel smaller. I guess satellites kind of make the earth feel smaller, and, you know, airplane travel. It's kind of the same thing where, you know, it felt like this big unknown wilderness, and then you know, with Justin's help, we've gotten to this point where we've been able to, a lot of times, say without a doubt, yes or no to questions. And I think a lot of times there's guesswork in the SOC. And
yeah,
being confident in our answers, because we know we've searched everything we can, we've queried everything we can, we've looked for all the IOCs we can, you know, at a certain point, there's no more to do. And I think with alerts, you know, you work an alert and you do an investigation from that, but you're not necessarily getting everything. So the biggest unexpected value to me was how confident I can feel when we're giving customers answers, right? So if I'm thrown into a call, which happens probably more often than I'd like, but with the customer where they want answers now, I may have felt a lot less comfortable a year ago giving answers to a client, but now I know that we've done everything we can. So I think that confidence, and like I said earlier, that warm, fuzzy blanket we can wrap the client up in and make them feel like they're secure. And that's great, because alerts only see so much, tools can only detect so much, but whenever you have threat hunters actually proactively looking for things, we can find stuff that it's either obfuscated or that tools would never catch, because it would require an alert that's way too noisy, that would never be able to be tuned, that kind of stuff. Being able to be proactive and looking and really give our customers that proactive sense of security, I think, has been the biggest unexpected value. Because I thought it was just another way, when I started up, I thought it was just another way to look for stuff, right? But in the end, it's really helping mature the SOC, which is a big value to our organization, and also provide a security blanket for the customers that pay for it. So I think that's been the biggest part of it for us.
Yeah, I like the story that I've commonly told people, where when I was running the SOC and I was trying to tell our leadership, like, we should really start looking at threat hunting. And this was like, I don't know, probably 15 years ago now or 10 years ago. And the conversation kind of went where I was like, yeah, we should be doing this threat hunting thing, you know, looking for threats. And they're like, isn't that what you guys do already? And it was just like that mentality of like, I mean, yes, but like, we're kind of waiting to look for threat. I mean, it's like a different approach altogether. And then I had to like figure out how to explain that so that they understood that, yes, we respond to threats, but we're not like proactively looking for them in the same light. So that was always a fun conversation. But I do like that, like the confidence thing. Yeah, I mean, I just feel like you just get more intimate with the data sources and the data you have. And sometimes even like we've looked at really weird data sources, because we worked internally at a place where they'd have these ideas about how attacks possibly could happen to some critical product or app or something. So it wasn't something traditional. And it was just like, this is what we think could happen. And we go look at the data and we're like, well, the data makes no sense to us. Then we have to kind of figure it out. And then we learn about it. And then we kind of add to our skill sets as far as interpreting some data, stitching and seeing how data is related to come up with ideas and hypotheses that way too. So it's always kind of fun for me. I'm kind of a data junkie, but
the creativity that comes out of that too is a lot of fun. I think that adds to some of the absolute enjoyment of doing the threat hunting or doing the security work when you're looking at that abstract data and figuring out how to make it work for you.
Yeah.
Yep. A lot less fatigue too, compared to being a SOC analyst. There's, you know, it's more stimulating than seeing the same 7 alerts that you see every day.
Yeah, you kind of know in your gut that probably aren't something. So you just know you need to look at them just to confirm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the ones that you just have to make judgment calls on, but it's just like, yep, I don't think this is bad. And then you have to be like, is that bad?
Yeah. Always second guessing yourself. So from a measurement perspective, as you guys, what are some like your favorite things to measure or like metrics that if you would communicate it out that you either think speaks well to your program or things that help you like see the direction in which you're going and or maybe guide what maybe your next steps would be?
I think the biggest thing, and I know it's kind of uncommon for threat hunting teams to be handling custom detections, just kind of how it shook out here at Arson Defense. And it works for our processes because, you know, we're the ones that write the queries. And so we, you know, why not implement them if we have that capability, which Justin absolutely does. But I think the biggest metric is the custom detections that we're implementing, right? So stuff that we're seeing on based on real world data, stuff that's actually being exploited in the wild, and not custom detections, like I said before, that are looking for hashes and IPs, but stuff that's actually looking for really high fidelity TTPs. Like Justin mentioned, the SharePoint issue, SharePoint server issue that popped up last week, that really kept us busy for a few days. That one is a huge one, right? Because that you're not going to see that kind of activity in a false positive manner. And also, it's something that's really active right now, really hot button. And when our bosses can come to us and say, are we looking for this? We can say, yeah, there's a couple of detection for it. And Justin, as he mentioned, literally just this morning was like, hey, we got a detection for that. You know, we, the SOC sent it up, right? So it's not just looking for it and continuing to look for stuff, but it's also having alerts that we write that we don't have to keep looking for something. I think seeing those numbers go up, the customer detections go up, and the number of high quality customer detections go up, because we had a few different people write them before. They were fine, but you know, they just weren't the most high fidelity ones. They either needed tuned down or just stuff that isn't the greatest, or you know, old intel that's gone by the wayside at this point. But the fact that we've consistently been able to crack, you know, 5, 10 or more custom detections a month has been really helpful to make sure that we're looking for the stuff that's most important that's going on right now. So I think that's really been a testament to where we've gotten as a program, because sure, we can look, we can make escalations based on our findings. We've even found true positives, right? Those have been great, but it's the recurring, always looking, you know, we can turn ourselves into an automation and then not have to look for it anymore. So our attention could be put on something else. Justin, is there anything else that you can think of that on this topic?
I mean, with the coverage improvements are great. Also, when we're talking about time to triage, you know, with these custom detections and with the threat hunting that we do, we also lay out different tips and, you know, teach the SOC analysts how to handle these detections when they come in, because they're not used to them. So we're building a stronger SOC with those detections, with the hunting. Also, when a hunt leads to like a broader security improvement, that's a huge win for us.
Yeah, that like encapsulates like it's hard to measure in sometimes, right? Especially depending on how like distant people are from the actual operational side of things. But I do feel honestly that threat hunting, when done right, makes the entire security ecosystem better, because it kind of helps improve where places are maybe not as strong, but also fills in gaps in other places as well. So I feel like it helps kind of balance things out, but bring everything up. So I'm glad that you guys kind of see something similar too, because it kind of validates at least my thoughts. If you had all the resources you needed, what would be the next thing you'd want to try to do within the threat hunting program? Like if there was something holding you back, budget, nothing else, would you have anything that you think would make a dramatic change for what your program could do?
So I don't even think it's budget at this point. Well, I mean, I guess it ties into budget. It's mainly getting resources, human resources, to be able to replicate myself and Justin, because there's only one of each of us, right? So if we had a lot more resources, I'd be able to get to a point where we're more proactive with intel, right? So we get the high button stuff, the SharePoint server stuff, the big stuff that comes through, the 0 days that everybody's worried about, that get hot fix patches from people like Microsoft the next day. So we look for that stuff. We get the stuff that's handed off to us, the hot button stuff. But I really want to get into more proactive with intel, right? So not just looking at what's coming to us, but also going out and looking and seeing what we see. And it might not be the biggest headline grabbing thing, but if we can add more of those hunts that we're looking for, the proactive stuff, and potentially getting more custom detections created, I think that would really help us even more so improve what we're looking for. Because we're looking for a lot of stuff at this point, but if we can look for a lot more of that real world data, I think that would be a lot more helpful.
Yeah, my favorite thing is really just to try to find the thing that's been sitting forever that just no one's seen before, right? Because I feel like, that's when I feel comfortable that I have a good understanding of the environment or the systems and how they work, or, you know, how attackers behave. Like when I can sit there and just say, hey, if I just look for this, I might actually find something, kind of thing. So yeah, those are always fun, and you can be really creative with those too.
Yeah, because everyone's looking for the SharePoint server issue.
Yeah,
right now. You're always talking about it, but you're not talking about the other intel that's coming through right now. And that stuff could fly under the radar and then smack you right in the face. So would like to be able to see more than just the really big stuff.
Agreed. Tom, that kind of closes some of my questions. Do you have any parting questions for the guys that you're curious about?
No, you jacked my last question there. I was curious what the dream was, you know, because that's always interesting. Is you know, people have different visions for what their hunt program can be. You know, it's relative to their environment, how they're working, what their team looks like, all these things. But that's the one that always fascinates me, because I think there's some really awesome ideas from guys like you that are out there on the front lines that are doing the thing, because you have your own ideas of what would make it a success. So yeah. I'll toss it to Justin since Ben asked. Justin, what do you think? What would be your daydream scenario for next steps for your hunt process and program?
I agree with more resources like Ben was saying, because that would allow me to start digging in further. Ben and I last week were in one of our threat intel source programs, and I was telling him, man, I could spend hours in here digging through and finding things to hunt for, building out our hypothesis queries a little bit deeper. Yeah, just more resources. I would have to echo that for sure.
You guys maintain like you get ideas, you kind of have like a backlog, or you just kind of throw ideas to stick to if you have time to go visit?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I have, we have a threat hunting OneNote that I kind of just, if I have an idea, I'm like, oh crap, let me throw that in the OneNote. Translating our queries is another one that we want to do, so we're ready for other platforms, because there are other platforms that we're looking in right now. So translating our queries, because the logic, the pseudocode's there, right? So it's not like it can't be used in other platforms. It's just a matter of finding whatever fields and other crap that you have to cut through to get it to work in another platform. So if we get that logic can be ready for, if we do have a customer that comes on and they say, hey, we're sticking with X, Y, or Z tool and you're going to have to deal with it, then we can be a little more ready for that. That's another thing that's in that backlog that popped into mind when you brought that up.
Since you guys are hands-on and are writing a lot of the stuff and you're looking at, and you talked about more resources, I'd be curious what your views are on the outlook of threat hunting as it falls to like the human in the loop. Like, do you believe that technology will be able to kind of overtake where the humans lie, or do you think the humans are always going to be a necessary cog? A lot of people have different views on this. I'm curious what you guys think.
Very hot button. Anything AI is hot button.
Yeah,
but I'm the type, I don't know if it's because I'm an optimist, but I anytime there's been a technical advancement in the world, whether it be the Industrial Revolution all the way up until now, there's always been automation that's replaced humans, and then there have been more jobs for humans in other places. And I think I see AI as a tool. I don't see it as a replacement for humans in threat hunting, because there are always, I think the hardest thing for AI to grasp is context. So AI can say, hey, that script is bad, but it struggles, at least in its current iteration, to say, okay, but it's not bad whenever you look at this context. And it could advance to that point, but I think AI is a long ways off of actually being generative AI, as opposed to, you know, working off of an algorithm. So I think it would need to be a lot more advanced to get to that point. But I do think even if AI does get to that point, I think humans and AI will work together in security for this kind of stuff, because I think you'll always need a human, unless AI advances to the point where it can actually be at a human's level of intelligence. But I have my doubts there, at least in my lifetime.
Yeah, I look at it like I always call it a tool, but it's like the difference between going from like a handsaw to a circular saw, where you go from like, you know, something manual versus a power tool. Like, yeah, you can do a lot more with a power tool, but you also do a lot more damage too if you don't use it right. So
me and you talk about a lot on the show the creativity the attackers have. And that's coming from a human, you know, thought process. Some of the things that we see people come up with, there's some of the intel reports that come out of how somebody achieved the compromise. It's just fascinating. And it's like, if you're going to have that kind of creativity on the attacker side, you're going to need that kind of creative thinking on the defender side. So yeah. I'm a big team human in the loop, for sure.
Just to add on to what you were saying, we're seeing now threat actors using AI to breach systems. So you're going to still need that blue team to combat with AI to stop those threat actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're looking at engineering stuff is nuts too, utilizing it.
Yeah. Especially when they're looking at processes now, like the threat actors are looking at processes now to attack AI and how AI is being used by the average end user and manipulating that, you know?
Yeah, there's some really creative stuff there that I've seen. All right, well, Ben and Justin, I really want to thank you guys for taking the time for joining us here. I'm going to give out a couple announcements before we cut away. One is we're going to have an Intel-driven threat hunting workshop analyzing malware behavior. So it's a hands-on approach. If you got analysts that are interested in getting some hands-on, some real data, I don't know if you guys have ever seen our workshops, but basically... Yes. Okay, cool. Yeah. So there's one coming out. It's going to be July 31st, right around the corner from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then also we'll be at Black Hat. Tommy will be Black. Are you guys going to Black Hat?
Nope. We're not. Our boss, Steve, he's going to be out there. So I think he's meeting with you guys too. So
cool. Yeah. Well, Tommy will be out there and he'll be kind of manning the booth a little bit, talking to some people at booth 5742. With that, I really want to thank everyone for tuning into the Out of the Woods segment for our testimonials from the trenches. We really appreciate our guests, Ben and Justin, for sharing their perspective from the field, and we look forward to bringing you more stories straight from the front lines. So with that, that closes out this episode of Testimonials from the Trenches. See you guys next week. Happy hunting.
Happy hunting.